Hi, welcome to The Creative Mind, a podcast about startups, entrepreneurship, technology, and creativity. This is the first English episode, so I'm asking for your patience and for any mistake I can make. And we have a very special guest tonight. I'm speaking about Artashes Tumanov. I don't know if that's the proper way to pronounce it. He's a Russian entrepreneur who is co-founder at Teletype.in, a publishing platform, a great publishing platform for creators, and also at most social search and discovery app for OTT consumers. So thanks a lot, Artashes, for accepting the invitation. I'm thrilled to have you here and very glad to meet you and to be able to talk to you directly. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to hear you speak English. You're doing a great job.
Thank you. I'm trying my best. So let me provide a little bit more context to the audience. About a month ago, someone in my community here, maybe it's in the chat or listening to the conversation, recommended Teletype, which is one of your products, and we will be speaking about it. And I just texted it and immediately realized it's a great platform, a great product, and it's very interesting and very attractive blogging platform. So I've been using Medium for a couple, maybe 3 years now. And when I tried Teletype, it was simply a lot better, a lot comfortable, and with great user experience, a very simple user interface. So what I loved more about Teletype is the expression possibilities, embedding iframes into the post that I haven't seen it before in another platform. Adding Telegram posts inside of the article, which is something most companies don't care about, even logging with Telegram. So the simple and minimalistic design, multiple blocks, custom domain with SSL, which is very important, and Medium charges for it. And the comment section, which is way better than Medium's. Reactions are emoji-based, more expressive than Medium's applause also. So it just feels great to have a tool like that where you can express your ideas and in the way you can do it with Teletype, right? So it just felt, I just fell in love with the platform, the product, and I started researching a bit more into the company, the future roadmap, and eventually wrote to you asking for more information about the product, which you were very kind to reply. And I also requested profile verification. I just moved my blog entirely to Teletype, and I feel great with that decision. But before we speak more in depth about Teletype, I would like to know more about you. Can you tell us about your background, your personal life experience, creating startups? How did you get here with these two companies? Tell us about your story. That would be great.
Thank you for the nice introduction and the kind words about the product. Things to know about me. Well, I was born and raised in Moscow, actually, Russia, up until the age of 18 when I moved with my immediate family to Canada. But so in Russia, I guess I've always had it in me, you know, the entrepreneurship sort of like roots. I've always been into the business of media. So as early as high school, I started a newspaper at school and was distributing it. Like I was printing it, like using my own, the little money that I had. So that was like my first experience of kind of like building a nice team and just, you know, gathering people around and doing something productive with my time. I studied journalism in Moscow. I did not finish the school because of the move to Canada. And when I moved to Canada, I was faced with a bit of a different reality since everything suddenly switched to English. And my English at the time was not superb. So I went into business. So I got a degree in business management. Which gives you sort of like, I guess, the foundation to understanding of just how to operate in the business world. But I've always been like into building my own project. So my first internet experience was when I was probably like 16 years of age. It was in 1997 in the United States. So I was so fascinated that I thought like, okay, this is something that I wanted to do. And seeing how, you know, how amazing it was and how easy sort of it was to build a site, build a presence and kind of start getting, you know, traffic to the site. So I started like my first website. It was, I guess, if I look back at it, it was sort of like this first move into the web 2.0. So I built like a community, sort of like a Huffington Post off, but it was just too early. So when anyone could contribute to the website, any topic they wanted, they could write and post it on that site. And it grew pretty quickly to an audience of about like 2 million people. So that was like my first website. And then I sort of like inadvertently kind of fell into more of a technology field. So I had different websites and communities across different verticals, from e-commerce to digital marketing to web hosting to development, all these things. And then also it grew until I finally like sold it to another Canadian, a much bigger company. And it was at that time, it was about maybe like 5 years ago, when I met up with one of my best friends, who was also like a Russian-Armenian entrepreneur, doing exceptionally amazing projects around the world. We met, and it was at that time that I joined sort of like his team of a bit of, I guess you can call it like a, almost like a tech lab to work on different internet startups. And the two projects, the Teletype and Must app, were born exactly out of that beginning, pretty much at the same time. So this is, I guess, this is kind of like my, you know, road to today. So, I mean, we can talk about like how, you know, like why we started these things and conversation develops. Yeah.
It's great. You have a huge background and a very inspiring life story. I was thinking, why maybe moving from Russia to Canada? Is it better to create startups, companies, maybe living in Canada better in general than Russia? Maybe that's a factor, right?
Well, I didn't have much choice because it was sort of like a decision of my parents at the time. So the whole, both of my parents and my sister, like we moved as a family at the time. And it was a relatively difficult move for me because I was doing quite well in the media business. In the media industry. At that time, I was trying to get, you know, I was worked in radio, I worked in TV, and I really enjoyed the process. I was trying to learn as much as possible about the media business, like not just only on the surface, but on the technical side, like how a radio station works exactly, how, you know, a TV, you know, van that goes out on, you know, to cover events, how it works on a technical level. So I was trying to kind of gather as much information as possible. And in a way, you're correct. Russia at the time, and it was the very end of 90s, it was exploding in almost like every single segment of the market. So to leave Russia at the time, it was hard because it was a great time to start businesses because everything was new on the market, and the market is huge and very focused, you know, on the Russian speaking, obviously, people. In Canada, you know, Canada, that's more of a, you know, socialist kind of like system. It was harder to get started. It was already like developed. I found, even compared to the United States, like if we're looking at California, where, you know, there's a lot less red tape to start and try and innovate and try different technologies. In Canada, there's a little more like regulation, you know, like, so if you're, you know, I put it this way, Elon Musk would have had a lot harder time doing his projects in Canada than in the United States. So that gives you a bit of, I guess, you know, a contrast between, let's say, the Russian market for entrepreneurship and Canadian market for entrepreneurship, and also United States market for entrepreneurship.
Oh, I see. Now I understand. That's wonderful. When somebody speaks about Russia, the first thing it comes to my mind is Telegram, is Pavel Durov. You know, a lot of creative people are born in Russia, and I think it's weird how those creators go outside. It's something like, it's a little bit like Cuba. A lot of creators are, you know, going to another countries, because here creating companies, evolve, grow as a person, it's very hard. So I understand, but yeah, it's wonderful. And I see you have strong passion about the communication, about media, about television, radio. So I better understand now why creating Teletype. But which is the product mission, Teletype itself? What is Teletype solving? And what Teletypes does better? For example, as I said, it's better than Medium, a lot better. But it will be great to speak more about Teletype, which is the mission itself of the product.
Well, you know what? Earlier, you sort of kind of like touched on it when you slightly were introducing like Teletype at the beginning. We started Teletype almost like for the same reason you switched from like Medium, you know, and because when we were looking for a platform, like a blogging platform, to keep in touch with our own communities, with, you know, different projects like Must, for example, we couldn't really find something that we really loved ourselves. So we basically just built our own product. So this is how it came to be. We built it exactly how we wanted. And then we kind of, you know, released it on the market and see how it started behaving. We were not pursuing it aggressively. It was just kind of living, and we were adding features as we went, as we heard feedback from the customers. It's maybe not correct to call them customers because it's a free service, but users, you know, like people would request certain things and we'd see like what was most in demand, and we kind of focus on that feature. So this is how we started Teletype. It was because like we wanted a platform that was addressing our personal needs. And the fact that it's, you know, it has this minimal look, beautiful tools and everything, is because the team that's working on the product is has done phenomenal products before. Like, you know, this is a Red Dot Design Award team that won the award that they built. Like Must is an Apple's choice product as well. It's, you know, it's globally featured by Apple. So the people that are building the product, the key people are the same. So we knew that we could build like the best looking product and technology for people. And I almost can be as confident to say that our editing engine of the Teletype is a lot more dynamic, and it's a lot better than Medium's one. That's for sure.
Yeah, I agree. The user experience is a lot better. And, you know, a lot of products start solving a problem that the founders have or the immediate creators have. I do agree with that. So, yeah, you solved your own problem, but also you solved the problem of thousands, millions of people around the world, right? So you solved the problem, and you solved it right. You solved it with a nice solution, a very nice solution. And I see Teletype is a great product. So maybe let's speak about the Teletype market. How many countries are engaging with the platform? How many people around the world, if you can share maybe some numbers, so we can better understand the size of the platform itself?
You know, very interestingly, with Teletype, we weren't pushing it anywhere, right? Like, just to begin with. So it was living on its own on the web. And the interesting thing is, like, everything that we sort of like create as app or a service or a product, we always aim at an American market. We don't necessarily go after the Russian market. But with Teletype, so it happened that it started to, last year, it started to explode in the Russian market. Maybe it's because our kind of like personal network is larger there. And, you know, like you have more friends participating, you know, the word of mouth spreads, whatever. But it, for some reason, it started to pick up in that particular market. Thankfully, we're familiar with that market very well because we built successful products in that market before. Like if we were, let's say, like a purely American company, like we'd get probably a lot harder time dealing with it because, you know, it's a completely foreign market, right? So you don't know how to operate quite in there. So we got lucky that we have the experience. And then last year, at the very end of last year, suddenly we saw one of the largest, I guess, bloggers in the country switch from a competing product that used to be, an iconic status in the country. He switched to Teletype. And he did so in a very public way. Like he spoke out about it, how the other platform, sucked and was not good anymore. And he made waves, like media waves. So almost like every single media outlet in the country started covering his move. And with that, we started getting hundreds and thousands of other people moving their content and blogs from other services to Teletype. And that gave us the first initial push. And this year, like we've seen like a tremendous growth. I mean, like, you know, to give you an idea, we're in the hundreds of thousands of users right now with Teletype and just over 200,000 like creators. That right, but predominantly that's the Russian market. So because of those moves and because other, you know, celebrity bloggers and, you know, known people started switching with it and brought their audience to Teletype, like it exploded. So I would say like at least 90% of our audience is comes from Russia.
Yeah. It's unpredictable market is something very dynamic and anything could happen. So I think that's great. Why Teletype? I was very curious about the name because the first time I just saw the name, I immediately thought about Telegram. I thought maybe that this is a Telegram related product. And when I saw Telegram integration, I say, why? Maybe Telegram is behind this. I don't know. But why Teletype? Why that name?
I wasn't the one to come up with the name, but, you know, a simple search just tells you Teletype is the first, it's pretty much the first device that communicated a text-based message. So a word,
right.
You know, a communication, that's what we kind of ran with.
It's a great name. I love it. So someone is asking in the chat, what was the marketing strategy for Teletype? If it was done. As you said before, I think you didn't have any marketing strategy. You just launched the product and put it there, and people started using it. But if currently there's any marketing strategy for Teletype?
Yes, I mean, you know, it evolved in time. Almost everything we do when it comes to internet companies is essentially building a product that we think there is pain on the market and it solves a certain kind of problem. And we're building a minimum like viable product essentially, and we're putting it out there, you know? But we're building it fast and we're building it in such a way that it would get like a very, very high reviews, you know, like as a quality of the product. And then we watch. Then we see how it operates. There's no particular like marketing strategy of the beginning. Of course, there are, you know, in a way, shortcuts. You can get like strong advisors, right, to attract them and use their connections to maybe bring somebody on board that would boost your chances. In the case of Teletype, we didn't do that. We, I guess, got lucky that, you know, one of the biggest bloggers in the country switched to our platform and it became known. It definitely helped becoming Telegram friendly, like in terms of that it's integrated with Telegram, so for like quick previews and page loading. And then as at this point, like yes, we're reaching out now to the biggest, let's say, like bloggers and creators on the market, they are already familiar with Teletype. So the marketing strategy is literally just going after creators and inviting them to the platform that has a very strong, you know, roadmap ahead of itself. Like we are, like, and we've been pretty open about it. Like we want to build a platform for creators to give them an easy and very powerful tool, like all in one, to monetize their content. So naturally, some type of monetization tools would come. Like, you know, like it's really funny because I was engaged in a conversation with someone under my recent post on in the Teletype blog, talking about like monetization and if people were kind of looking into it. And when it comes to the Russian market in particular, over 50% of the like Russian internet consume, creators content, right? Content created by creators, like independent creators. And almost a third of the market participates in creating their own content. So we know that the market is there, right? And when we looked at it, we tried to see that even though 75% of these kind of creators in the country, they're not making any money on their content, more than half of them, they really plan to do so. So it's about giving them tools to actually do it, you know, either through donations or, you know, subscriptions, sort of like Patreon does it, you know? And when I was looking back, and obviously like Medium is like sort of like an elephant, right? In the whole room of, you know, building like great community of like, you know, creators and people that give amazing like insights into the world. There were, interestingly enough, I was never, I mean, like I read sometimes like 2-3 great stories on Medium every month or so, but I was never really keen on subscribing to the service that they sell, like, you know, the monthly subscription service. But I faced at least a couple times when I read an article, I was, you know, I was ready to donate. So send like a real, like, you know, a $20 donation to that particular author. And because Medium did not have that option, the author kind of like walked away with nothing, like no money, basically. Even though, because I got a colossal amount of information and value from that story, I wanted to kind of say thank you in certain way. And I couldn't do it. The author just got maybe like a few thousand likes, but you know, likes don't really like pay.
That's right.
It would have been great to get like, you know, like a something. Even if 1%, I was like, you know what, it's amazing. Like, because even if 1% of people who hit like donated at least like a dollar, this guy would have made like, you know, easily like, you know, $1,000 maybe just on a single story, you know? And this is pretty much the something that I keep thinking about, is that give the people the flexibility to make their own rules, you know, like how they want to operate with their audience, because they work really hard. Like it's so hard. When I was on Instagram, I was, my page was not really about me. It wasn't a personal page. I was like into photography for a while, and I was posting pictures, and I know like how difficult it is to build your audience. Like no matter what you do, whether it's a podcast, I mean, there's a lot of competition, right? So it's very hard, but it would be really cool to, you know, to not establish your own rules, like, you know, the government, like the Medium has a certain rule, right? If you're, you know, you need to get into the very privileged few percent of writers that kind of get into the revenue share through their subscription. So for a new author that contributes an amazing story, like it's very difficult to get into that, you know, very prestigious group of people. So yeah. Patreon, you know, but the media, what they do well, they do they promote content very well, like inside their community, right? They push content very well, they help you build an audience maybe quicker. Patreon does not do that, but they're great at just giving you the tools and, you know, subscriptions and everything. But so I feel like, and Substack, you know, that if you're familiar with Substack, like for sending out, you know, mailing lists and getting contributions for that, they do just one thing, but they do. So it feels like every single company like that, like Substack, Medium, Patreon, they do great one thing, but they don't do all of it like at the same time. Like we want to be the platform that sort of gives you the tools to do it and also helps you build an audience at the same time, you know, like so kind of like a all-in-one tool.
That's great. It's a wonderful mission, and it's a wonderful roadmap. And I was expecting to ask about the roadmap itself, but you know, I see the marketing strategy, getting back to that, is maybe word of mouth, right? Just like Telegram does, creating a great product, putting there, evolving and, the product, improving the product, and the product eventually the product is going to grow and engage with people. So that's great. Yeah.
Exactly as you said, it was sort of like this. You build, first of all, without a great product, you don't have anything. It's almost like, you know, there's like 100,000 calendar apps out there, or 100,000 note apps out there, but only certain few. And then, like, you know, somebody like Notion comes around and they reinvent a bit of a, you know, space, you know, with that. Or somebody else like launches an amazing calendar that has the, you know, the booking feature built in, you know, like the other calendars don't have. So it's like, it's about finding, like, really solving it in a way that it's super easy for the end consumer and does exactly that. Listen, if somebody wants to run the blog on your own domain name, give them that choice, you know, like we're giving, like you can come with your own domain name and use Teletype for free as well. So
that should be always free. That's something that it's very basic, right? And Medium is charging for everything, something that basic, you know. And I think Medium started very well. They started doing it very well, but eventually they, you know, they are thinking right now and making money, and it just became a very noisy place, a very hard to read place. Medium was aimed to be a place where you can read normally without distractions, and they are charging the user interface with more and more components, and it's harder and harder to read, and the daily digest via email, and it's very hard. So I just found Teletype, it's way better, way comfortable, and I'm applauding for that that effort, and that's great. I was thinking about the Teletype operation, maybe expenses, because it's a free tool. How are you operating right now? Maybe how much money is it costing, or how many people do you have in the team working maybe remotely? How is it going, Teletype operation?
You would probably not believe like what I was about to tell you, but for the longest time, for the first like couple years of the project, it's about 3 years now, it was literally built by, I would say, two people. We had a developer, a single developer. We had a product designer who did that. And the two other founders, like we were sort of like, you know, more about business development and marketing side. But we didn't, I wouldn't say that we're contributing directly to the product itself, right? Like to the changes and functionality and all this stuff. Yes, we're like heavily involved in the strategy and business development, but not the development part. Like we can't code. And it was 2 years ago, 2019, we were, me and my partner, we were actually visiting the Apple's developer conference in San Jose. And I got a LinkedIn message from one of the VCs in San Francisco, and at the time we were kind of raising around for Must app at the time, and I thought like, oh, okay. And they were like really wanted to meet, and I was like, oh, okay, great. Like, so I sent them the deck for Must and everything. They was like, no, we actually wanted to speak to you about Teletype. And I was like, and I was shocked because we weren't pursuing it like super actively at the time in terms of, you know, raising money or whatever. We were running it ourselves, almost like bootstrapped, you know. And so the expenses were very, very low, and we could afford to do that ourselves. So when we met, and they were like, oh, guys, like, that's amazing. We sort of gave a presentation that we weren't ready for, but we showed them, like, I guess, what Teletype was, all the features and a bit of a roadmap ahead. They were so invested. So, and we asked them, like, how many people do you think, like, you know, build this and everything? They're like, well, probably, like, you have, like, what, like, six, you know, maybe, like, a team of six or eight. I was like, no, there's just two. They were floored. Like when we said it was just like a team this small.
It's impressive.
And honestly, it's not the only, like, we're not the only guys who built like things like that. I know there's other people out there that do it almost like by themselves, and they build amazing products. So we're like hustling our way through Teletype. But the last year, we're definitely like expanding because we were able to raise around now, like on our terms. And at this point, I mean, that meeting with that VC did not lead anywhere in San Francisco. But it was an interesting experience, and we weren't really looking for the money anyway. But so we waited, and then we raised funds. I can't really say exactly how much we're burning a month. It's not much, but it's not much. The team is still not very big. Less than 10 people, I would say. So we're very comfortable where we are, and we're very efficient at what we do.
That's great. And now that Teletype is getting even serious, it's getting bigger, and you're now preparing for, you know, more growth and stuff like that. Can you tell us more about the roadmap, maybe the next features, improvements? We've been speaking privately for some days, and I've been sending you some feedback. Even my community has been using the product itself and saying, hey, this button or this thing. So the product is pretty wonderful. But in the long term, now, what are you thinking to do? Which is the next step for Teletype?
I'll be very careful in what I say, because we haven't released any of these features, but I am going to be openly, obviously, talking about it, because we did, you know, talk in the press and the media as well about our roadmap. So definitely now that we sort of like, you know, we're able to like raise a little fund that gets us through to the next like a certain amount of time, we definitely want to develop an application, a native application, because we think like it's going to really do incredible things for our engagement. Like, I think it's going to like multiply by 3-4 times, because the challenge right now is, you know, even if like I follow you on Teletype, and so for me to read an article, I need to first visit the website teletype.in. And then I need to see the post from you, like one of those, to notice it and then click on it to end there. Whereas if I had an app installed, I would get it like immediately on the app, right? Notification would come the second you publish a new story, then it's in my hand. And with at least like 75-80% of traffic being on mobile, it's just a very natural thing for us to have a native like application. Thank God we have really amazing experience building apps. We just did not have the capacity to do so with a very limited resources and team. But now that we do, like, this is what we hope to do. And the second thing, naturally, we want to start dabbling, studying like monetization and providing tools to what I spoke before, right? The tools that help creators, you know, earn a little bit.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, but that's do it wonderful. Like in the most like flexible way, so that like you almost like create your own rule exactly what you want. Do you want donations? Do you want subscriptions? Do you want both? Do you want hide certain content? Do you want to make it public? Like, it's completely like up to you, with absolutely minimal cost that we can possibly do. So these are the two, I guess, gigantic features that we'd like. Another feature, I can talk about it because we spoke about it, and people, like almost like every third, fourth, like I say one out of every four questions is about like, how can I customize the look of my blog? So people really want customization, and it sounds like it's an amazing kind of like this add-on kind of premium feature. It's very difficult to build because we really need to conceptualize exactly how it's going to be done. We did actually do custom design for a couple of like really big authors in Russia, because these guys have like millions of followers. They have a large audience, so we kind of built a custom site around the Teletype engine for them. It looks like a full-on like website, like a news website, you know. It looks phenomenal, it looks great.
I saw it.
Yeah, so I mean, it looks amazing. It's still the same tools for them to use to publish. Super simple, no technical headache at all. Like, it's like even WordPress requires some level of, you know, experience, you know, some technical knowledge to kind of maintain. With us, it's nothing. It's like so simple. So we're looking at that, of how we can bring some of that into a system solution, you know, like that we can kind of spread. These are the things that I personally want to see done, you know, within the next like year, let's say, because this is like, these are like major features and functionalities.
I see those things just sounds very exciting. And I will be following the product development very closely and supporting, and I hope my community could embrace the product. I've been speaking with them about the advantages of a Medium or another platforms. Yes, Teletype has to grow, has to evolve, improve, but you know, it's a wonderful product. So let's use it, let's do more with it. And it's wonderful. I'm really, really grateful for this platform. And about the mobile app, that's a great idea also. I have the progressive web app installed on the mobile also, just like a web view, and it's working fine, but you know, having a mobile, a native mobile application, that would be great. So a lot of success, wishing a lot of success for the future. And maybe we could speak about another application, right? The another platform, Must, which is kind of a social network for movie hunters, right? What about Correct. That product? I saw it overview, right? It's a great design also. And I haven't installed the application yet, but I was looking into the website and it just looks gorgeous.
It's absolutely a beautiful, stunning product. You know, I would say like what's Must? Like Must was started for two fundamental reasons. Number one is that friends make better recommendations than film critics do. Because friends know you better, they know what you like, and they can make you like, you know, a much better recommendation for a movie or a TV show. And number two is that bad memory. So by the time you get home, you probably already forgot, you know, what the name was of that movie or film that somebody recommended to you. So, in a way, we at first Must was followed the same strategy as Teletype. When we launched it 3 years ago, we built a very simple kind of, you know, not a journal, like a catalog, right, of things to keep track. So you have this database of everything that's out there in the world of movies and series. And then you sort of, you have your lists, you keep your list, like of the stuff that you've seen, the stuff that you want to see, very, very primitive, very simple. And it started to gain traction at first. We released it, it got very, very nice reviews on the App Store. And then we received an email from Apple. And I guess they were really loved like what we were doing and how we were doing it, and appreciated the look, because it was built like with a very native like Apple look. A lot of people at first made sort of like a bit of a mistake of, is this an Apple app or what? And and they started globally featuring Must in different countries around the world. Like there's 1 week like would be in Austria, 1 week would be in Russia, 1 week would be like in the United States, and it would commonly appear along all the other like major like film apps, you know, like for people that really looking for recommendations. So that gave us the first organic push, and we understood that this is the product like worth like pursuing, and we put more money on the table and then started pushing it with like a team of I think 12 people pushing the product. We were not focused on any level of monetizations. For us, we wanted to build a social community around it. And the social engine for Must, you know, like the friends and everything, to see what they're watching, how they're liking it. Like those are big factors, you know? Like when you can go in the movie, like or a show, and then you see like your friends' ratings, personal comments about these things, it really helps you kind of understand like how you were, you know, like what to watch next for you, because everybody has limited time to consume content, you know. And one of the things that we really like invested in was the machine learning. Like we basically developed our own algorithms that would compare your taste to all the other people on the network, and kind of match your taste and build your recommendations based on a similar taste of other people on the network. So your recommendations for films that the app gives, and it has like every film has like a bit of a score, and called like a must match score. Like it gives you an understanding of how you are likely to enjoy this film based on different variables. So, you know, like 3 years later, I mean, probably like we have like the last I checked, probably like over 25 million films, like shows have been marked as watched on the app. Like there's probably like around 10 million today, like at least 10 million films like still on the want list.
So it's people are huge.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Wow. Actually, like I would give like one more reason of like why we kind of started it. My personal reason is to keep track of TV shows, because I watched like a few shows at the same time and I get lost with like which episode was the last. So the app kind of allows you to kind of like, once you watch an episode, kind of like mark it like, okay, I watched like, you know, episode 3 is done. So it kind of keeps you on track, at least like not to get lost into, you know, which show, like which episode you're on to watch. So yeah, people are using it. I mean, the phenomenally people are using it, and the engagement rate is like really, really high. Like, you know, for people that have at least like one other friend on the network, like they keep using it, like the app like is doing well.
I have to install it and test it, but you know, it's wonderful, and I admire your product vision in the long term, very focused in the long term. You know, thinking into grow a product, engage the community, engage users in the long term. And that's wonderful. It's a very hard and very unusual, you know, strategy, but it works. And I see you've been featured in the App Store, in Mashable. The app, it's been the product of the week and product hunt. And looking for the design, as I said, it's a very, very wonderful design. And thinking and speaking about the design and the perfectionism and all the stuff, my friend Santi, who is the co-founder of one of my startups, he's asking in the chat, what do you think about the perfectionism? If it's enemy of the good things, the functional things, thinking about the growth stage, what do you think it's most important, perfectionism or functionality, or maybe mixing two things? What do you think about that?
You know what? It's an absolutely phenomenal question. I'm just not a designer myself, right? I think it's a very kind of personal thing. So probably we should be asking like our product designer of how he went about it. When I spoke about him, because for me, when I was looking at, you know, this, you know, wireframes and everything, and one of the things that Must App has, emojis. Right, the emojis that you see on every single phone, right? And to me, at first, I was not really into them. To me, they were kind of ugly, and they were in a way breaking the design language of the app itself, right? It was very strange to see, because our rating system is based on emojis, right? Like 0 to 10, and we put like emojis basically of like, according to like, you know, like 1 is like this like, you know, a vomiting like emoji, like number 10 is like this like emoji with like hearts in the eyes, right? So and I was like, guys, like, you know, like it kind of like doesn't really fit the design. It's just like, it's like, all right, you know what? Explain to me. That's exactly the beauty, is that you kind of like mix and match of things that people are used to. And also you give them a different kind of experience. But it's about, I guess, you know, like I would presume it's more about functionality. You build a product that's super easy and fun to use and bring as much familiarity to it as possible. There was once, long time ago, a product called Google Wave that Google tried to launch a long time ago. At the time, they tried to reinvent like email, but what it seemed, it kind of resembled of like Slack of today. They just went about it in such a complicated way that nobody really figured it out how to use. So I wouldn't overcomplicate things. Looks definitely matter, but I think it's more about function, because looks can always be prettified later, you know. But as long as you're building something like that does the job well in a very pleasing way and everything, like you're good. I think it's more important. Build the product, a function, and you know, a bit of a fun factor.
Yeah, I do agree. Functionality is most important. Your product solves the problem, solved it well, and it just simply works is most important than maybe appearance or, as I said, makeup. But you know, you can add for more makeup, more design, more improvements to your user interface. But user experience is most important. So that's wonderful.
I wanted to add a couple of things that are sort of like maybe inadvertently helped Must grow, right? The first thing, you know, talking about marketing, but this is more about, I guess, timing, right? The timing of just content explosion, right? Like, you know that there's just a ton of content out there to be consumed. A fun question for you. Can you take a guess of how many, streaming providers like Netflix, right? Out there, like in the world, like how many do you think there are?
I don't know.
Just off the top of your head, like 100.
Let's say 1,000, for example.
Okay, well, that's up too much, but there's over 300. Like, I think it's like 327 by the last count. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's 237 in the United States alone. 237 wow. Netflixes in the United States market alone. And between them, they release over 500 scripted original series per year.
Wow.
So even if it was your job to watch all this content, you are not going to be able to do that. So there's clearly an overwhelming choice of platforms and content. I mean, there's so many specialty services, like, you know, that's only show documentary films. Another one just focuses on horror genre. Then there's like a streaming services that just shows, like, you know, Arshel Martz movies, and so on and so on. So it created a massive problem for the consumer. Like, the choice of platforms is a lot. Like, you know, there's too much time spent just deciding what to watch. And there's no easy way to know, like, what your friends are watching. You know, not to mention, like, it's very expensive to sign up for multiple services. You know, like,
yeah,
it's only
right.
That. I mean, there's, you know, people are cutting their TV cord, like, in cable for a reason, you know, because it's become too expensive. But they're going to go and spend the same or more money on just, you know, signing up for like 8, 10, 15 different streaming services. They don't need this much content. So Must kind of like solves that problem of like creating this like unified experience for people, unified search across all that content, bringing your friends into the mix and bringing the machine learning into the mix of understanding how your taste compares to everybody else, so that we do sit down for the 2 hours a week that you have to watch a movie, at least you'll, you know, make a good pick for yourself, you know, like, so you're not gonna like waste your time. Yeah, at least you'll watch something like worthy.
Well, that's great. That's great. I'm going to be installing the app and providing, you know, giving it to my friends and maybe start using it. It sounds pretty great. And what about the product? Is the product monetizing or is it provided as a free service?
We're not monetizing. The Must is the kind of product that we're not looking to monetize anytime soon. This is the product that we want to get like on board, like millions of users to. And so far the growth has been purely organic. We're probably...
That's right. That's right.
Probably like half a million users at this point. But
kind of,
we
kind
half, yeah. Yeah, we have not invested a single dollar in advertising of Must. Not a
Incredible.
Single dollar went to advertising. So it's mostly like, again, you know, the timing of that, the timing of the pandemic has helped too, because, you know, what do people started doing, like sitting at home? They started like, you know, watching content, you know, trying to get entertained. So all the forecasts for the people that are signing up for all this like streaming services have, you know, like, if like went up 25%, you know, by 2025, they thought like it was one number, you know, they thought there's going to be like 900, like a billion like people, but going to be by 2025. Now it's like 1.5 billion subscribers they expect by 2025. So it really like pushed those numbers up greatly.
That's wonderful. And I think you touched a very fundamental problem of people, that it's entertainment. People needs to spend some time entertaining and relaxing and, you know, free time doing fun stuff. And you're doing well, and I see the strategies the same as the same as Telegram, for example. They've been years developing the product, developing this platform, and they have, I don't know, maybe 500 million users active monthly, and they are starting monetizing right now today. But Telegram is huge, a lot of expenses. I don't know how much does Telegram cost to operate, but it's a huge platform. And even being a huge platform, they are following the same strategy, making a great product, put it there for the people so people can use it and start growing. And once it becomes mainframe, right? Not then you start monetizing, then you start thinking about business. So that's wonderful, and that's a race in the long term with a lot of resistance, I think. So maybe we should all think about that strategy, maybe think about our products in the long term. But there's one question that comes to my mind when I see these companies doing this, you know, is how do you live? What do you do for a living? I don't mean you directly, you can share if you want, but I mean, what do you do? How does those company survive to this complicated world, to this costly world? So that's a very interesting question, I think.
Well, there's always someone footing the bill, right? Because the servers are not getting, you know, paid on by themselves, right? Somebody has to pay the bills. In some cases, there would be the founders that are investing, just like in case of Telegram, you know, like he's been funding it his own money. Some people raise a bit of money on the side, family, friends. But irregardless of how much money is available from the founder, like our philosophy ourselves is to have like this bootstrapping mentality. Always hardcore, do it at the minimal possible budget to keep running. Like if we were to go out tomorrow and, you know, raise like millions of dollars to push one of these projects, it's not going to change. We're not going to go and start spending like 20 times the amount that we were spending every month. You know, we're not going to just burn the money. So we're still going to do all the things that we want to do. It just gives us like a, okay, maybe we'll do a little bit more things and quicker because we can expand, like, let's say, like the development team, but we're not going to go and, you know, embezzle the money, so to speak, on senseless things. Because the idea is when the dark day comes and you cannot raise further money, to be able to sustain the product on your own going forward. So we've always had this mentality: do not overspend, spend what you can afford to maintain. And this is how we kind of have been like operating.
That's the right mindset. You know, I've been reading a lot of about bootstrapping, and I'm also a bootstrapper. There's a lot of bootstrappers here. Also, my partner at Liduca, which is a platform for online education, free education, decentralized education. We've been doing it. I think all my startups are not huge. I'm just very small, but I'm a bootstrapper too. And there's a lot of you know, people doing it now. I don't know if you know Andrew Gazdecki, which is the founder of MicroAcquire. He founded now a media about, it's just like a kind of a newspaper, but about Bootstrapper. It's called bootstrappers.com. It's a nice publication. And yeah, bootstrapping is way better than maybe venture capital, because when you get funding, you have to comply with a lot of terms. And you lost a little bit of your freedom as creator, so that's wonderful.
I think having the bootstrapper mentality is absolutely critical to any investor out there, like who would know that you're not gonna just go and spend money senselessly. I do follow like bootstrapper. You said .com. Like I'm not familiar, but I do follow a couple other like sort of like communities like these, like indie hackers. I check in like regularly to see like, you know, share this, you know, people sharing their experiences and everything. But not all VCs are natural. VC money is great, like if it's the right you know, partner, and they are fitting very well with your mentality, they will never just intentionally go and do something to harm the company. because it's their investment, it's their money in play.
I understand.
It's about finding the right people. Like earlier this year, very early this year, we got, when we even started kind of like looking for like around for Teletype, we asked for, we went on the market kind of like looking for like one amount, and there's one VC in Europe that offered us four times the amount that we wanted to raise. We said no because there were certain, like, you know, a bit inconsistencies that we didn't like with, you know, the vision or what we wanted to build. Like, it was too early. And then we were looking at all our organic growth, and it's like, well, listen, let's just wait more. Like, you know, it wasn't a good fit. So, like, not all VCs are like horrible, and not all VCs like are fantastic. So it's about finding the right thing. And from my experience of meeting like a lot of them, they're all super friendly people. Like, I've never met like one terrible investor, and they're all really, really smart people. Like, they're in this business, especially those known VCs. They know exactly.
That's good to know.
Yeah, so
that's good to know.
It's all about finding the right person for you, for your particular company. And if you feel like your gut feeling is down, you're like, this is the perfect fit, and you see that they're really excited about it, they'll never just, you know, strangle you or like impose certain things if they believe in your vision, because the last thing they want to do is demotivate the founder. This is the last thing they want to do, because I mean, after all, it's the founder that built the product, and you know, if they see that they agree with his vision, whatever, they're just there to help. Yes, they want to make money in the long run, to help you achieve your like max performance, you know, like you're absolutely like on that track.
that sounds logical, coherent, right? So I was thinking, I had another mindset, but I will be checking that. I have, you know, I know some venture capitals, but just few people. Some of them is Tim Parsa. He's a founder of companies related to payments and payment infrastructure, but not about the media itself. But that's great. I just hope someday go into San Francisco, meet some of them, maybe go into Y Combinator. I don't know. I have a lot of a lot of path in behind, and I have to leave a lot. So do you have any advice for makers, entrepreneurs, something that you would like to know years ago that you know today, and maybe was important to know before, that maybe it's inspiring for the audience? What would you consider is the best advice you could give to a creator, an entrepreneur?
I only have one advice, quite honestly. It may be different for everybody because everybody learns on their own mistakes, you know, like along the way, and anyone's opinion can be different. My thing is, my advice is to start building the financial network around yourself very early on, because it takes a lot of time to raise money. And if you do build a product that's amazing, you'll probably end up speaking to at least, you know, you need to speak basically to 150, 200 investors to raise money from one of them. So if you don't have that financial network around you, start building it from like day one, because it's going to take you years.
A lot of people say it's the same thing.
That requires meeting people. That requires like maybe like getting, not just like cold emailing, okay? Because to meet a certain VC that you want to meet, they're unlikely to respond to your email. They are looking for warm introductions. You know, that requires you contacting other founders on their portfolio, for example, asking them, kind of meeting them first, you know, like, and then talking about you and saying like, can you make an intro to your guys, you know, like that's how it works. And that takes enormous amount of time, because how do you even contact these people? You either go to their official websites or you go to LinkedIn, and LinkedIn isn't really like working anymore. It's not like what it used to be, right? So like, how many people really respond on LinkedIn? Very few. So it's really is not as simple as it is, and it's going to take you a full time. So literally your attention is going to switch from, you're worrying about your product and building the functionality, to, okay, how do I reach this guy from this venture capitalist firm, and who do I know, or who do they know, who I know, who can put me in touch? So it's a challenge, you know. It's not difficult to talk to them once you're in the room. It's very easy. Like, it's they're making it super comfortable for you. but to get in that room is the problem, and you need to know people. So build those relationships.
We'll take note of that. Creating a social network around us and create this kind of financial freedom from the beginning. So we'll be working on about that. So thank you very much for the advice. Thank you a lot for your time. You've been a wonderful guest. You've been giving wonderful insights since the beginning. And I'm very grateful for this conversation, and wishing you a lot of success with Teletype, with Most, and with all of your companies. We'll be keeping engaged with your products. Hopefully, if I go to Canada someday, maybe we could have a coffee and speak about this wonderful things you're doing. And I'm really grateful for the audience. If this episode has helped you somehow or inspired you somehow, maybe share it with your friends, other creators, so it can help more people. So thank you. Thanks a lot, Artashas. I don't know if you have something else to share. I'm very grateful.
To thank you. I mean, it was a very exciting experience for me. I appreciate you switching to English for this first episode in English. It was a blast, quite honestly. It's been a while since I had like a really nice, like passionate discussion. it's really nice. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun for me as well. And definitely if you're in Canada and visiting.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. You've been
favorite coffee shop where most of my work is taking place.
Yeah, I saw a post about that. It's called Where is Teletype Being Made or something like that. It's very nice coffee, right? It's a wonderful place.
I love creative spaces. That's where it gives you a stamp. Like, you know what I mean? Like I don't have an office. I never had an office, but so
I have to leave
from coffee shops. Yeah.
I have to leave that experience. For my future, I want to go into this kind of nomad lifestyle and be in one city, another city, going to coffee, meet people, maybe do stuff for the YouTube channel and maybe interviewing creators. I don't know. That's something for the future.
Yeah, sounds like a great life. I mean, I think no one's going to argue with you that everybody wants to stay.
It's going to be hard, but I will try my best. So thank you a lot. You've been very kind. It's been a wonderful conversation. I hope people will love it too. And they've been leaving messages in the chat. So thank you. Thanks a lot. That's all for today. I'll see you all next week in the next episode of The Creative Mind. Thank you, Artashas. So it's wonderful. So till then, keep creating and have a good night. Thank you.
Like and subscribe, everybody. Oh, wait, that's the wrong platform.